Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So if after the primary election season you think you know everything there is to know about debates, it seemed like there were two a week there for a while, you might want to take a listen as we have two New York high school students demonstrate some of the styles of debating now in vogue on the competitive circuit. High school debate might be called Future Leaders of America. Richard Nixon, John F. Kennedy, Stephen Breyer, Samuel Alito, and infamously Karl Rove all took part, and its stronghold used to be wealthy suburban and prep schools. But a push to bring debating to inner city schools through the Urban Debate League has been underway for the last few years, and this year the college level national champions are graduates of one of these programs. Coming up in Chicago, the Urban Debate League is holding its own national tournament, and we are joined this morning by two of the four New York City students who will be competing. Keani Combs is a junior at Washington Irving High School near Union Square in Manhattan, and Guillermina Gigi Martino is a senior at the Secondary School of Law in Brooklyn. They are joined also by Will Baker, the CEO of the Impact Coalition, which runs the New York Urban Debate League. Welcome to WNYC, all of you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
And before we get to hear the two students debate a little bit, Will Baker, why don't you start and tell us a little bit of the genesis of the Urban Debate League and who's taken part in New York?
Absolutely. The urban debate movement dates back to the early 80s, and it started in Atlanta by a woman named Melissa Wade. And basically the notion was, how do we get students to have the same opportunities that were going on in elite public schools and great private schools across the country? As you said, captains of industries, leaders of our nation's government, a lot of them have exposure to debate. And so a program happened in the 90s led by the Open Society Institute with a partnership with the Impact Coalition and Emory University to bring debate to some Title I high schools in New York.
Now, I think I misspoke a minute ago, and it's not the finals that you'll be going to, but it's a national Urban Debate League tournament coming up in Chicago. Is that right?
Right. In Chicago, there'll be a invitational tournament. They've invited a couple of teams from each of the leagues to kind of come together for fellowship and conferencing, and there'll also be a tournament competition. We're really excited to have these students going to that. We're also at the same time sending 40 teams to the New York State Championships for the same weekend.
All right. So tell me about yourselves a little bit. Keani, you're a junior at Washington Irving High School. How'd you get into debating?
My story is different from a lot of other debaters. I started debating in the 7th grade in junior high school at IS 184. Basically, I didn't have, like, really a path of where I wanted to go, but I was always into arguments with people. So
As your parents can well attest, right?
Yep. So I just decided to put my ability to argue with people to good use, and I joined the debate team, and I was successful in junior high school. So then I decided to take it up in high school, and I've been doing it ever since.
Gigi, how about you?
Since middle school, I wanted to join a debate team, and I kind of pushed for it in middle school, but it wasn't happening. So when I got to high school, my global studies teacher, she was really cooperative with me, and I told her about it, and she jumped on it, and that's how we got our debate team started.
What drew you to it? Is it an interest in the issues? Is it that you used to argue with your sister or whatever?
Well, I knew I wanted to be a lawyer, so I knew that public speaking skills were necessary. Uh-huh. And then especially the topics that Urban Debate League brings up, I thought is, you know, amazing. It opened my eyes and views and stuff like that.
So I understand that there are some different, sometimes competing styles of debate. And we're going to ask you to demonstrate for us a little bit, but maybe you want to describe what they are. There's kind of an old school and a newer school rapid fire speed reading style. Will, you want to give us an overview?
Sure. There are lots of different approaches to the notion of convincing a judge who's the ultimate arbiter of a debate round. In many rounds, students are focused on kind of a congressional bill model, which is the notion of packing in as much information as possible as quickly as possible to convey everything about that bill. One of the challenges of that model is that it requires you to speak very quickly to kind of accomplish that. And Q can give you a quick demonstration if you want of that style before we go further.
Okay, how are we going to do this? Oh, you're just going to give us like one side of an argument.
Yeah, he's going to give kind of a demo on that, kind of walk you through that in another couple of styles.
Ready?
First, we have a Moral Obligation Act. Our evidence in the 1AC outlines the reason why we need to transfer politics to sub-Saharan Africa. This is key to having a better world. And secondly, extend across our Baudrillard evidence, which indicates that Eurocentrism is bad in at least the extension, because it will ultimately lead to the overexploitation of African individuals through mineral resources. This is our argument. Our time frame from this argument is now, because it says that constant exploitation will lead to extinction. And three, our near 99 evidence indicates that we need to break down the law. We need to break down the global domination within the border, start from the local and create a relationship of solidarity towards the other, where we can achieve better relationship with nations towards, such as Africa. Creating a policy towards sub-Saharan Africa will not do anything. When we create these relationships of solidarity, it's the only way we can solve it. For our Hicks evidence indicates that the transformation of the educational apparatus within the policy debate community is key. We need to connect our experiences and argumentation in order to have a pedagogical benefit to debate, rather than just coming up in here and talking about general policies.
Okay. Whoa. I feel like I'm at an auction.
The fascinating thing is that the human ear can actually hear at up to 300 to 350 words a minute. And so a judge could hear and relay back to you very simply all of the evidence and arguments he was referring to. For example, the amazing thing about that process is that Q was just quoting Baudrillard, a major scholar, and the arguments from there, and also Nair and Hicks, and extensive pieces of evidence and analysis that takes months and sometimes even years to develop and master.
So, I mean, that wouldn't go over with the general public in a presidential debate, right? I mean, I would guess that the vast majority of the listeners really couldn't figure out what side of what issue he was on. That was the first time I heard it, and I gathered it had something to do with the United States' relationship with improving education in sub-Saharan Africa, maybe?
100% right, Brian. And that's why the judge is the most important person in kind of deciding what type of approach the students take and how they engage. Some students connect debate with content that they've been involved with personally and how the topic affects them. And Q can also do a demonstration of that style to kind of just give the notion of personal reflection. And that's kind of slower in terms of the starting point, but still creates a metaphor between the topic and the items discussed. And Q, do you want to go ahead and give a sample of that?
Okay. The resolution calls for us to increase public health assistance to sub-Saharan Africa. Our argument is that is bad for a couple of reasons. First, it doesn't allow for us to create an understanding towards Africa or a relationship towards them. The only thing we do is we sit at home and we just talk about issues and we come and debate around it. We don't understand the actual implications to the policies that we create towards Africa. We are only exploiting Africa when we use debate as a forum to fiat policies, which is the ability to, you know, wish away the impact. We don't do anything. We don't create any action. This only leads to dominant discourse within our community. We are not able to express ourselves in multiple ways, and we exclude people from the site of, like, debate that are different from the actual forms of expression that are generally accepted within the debate community.
So was that basically the same material? Were those some of the same words?
Well, for the first one, I just, like, you know, this is an argument that I run and I've read at national tournaments and stuff. The first one was just like a fast-paced, more policy-oriented version of like speed reading and like critique and policy. The second one was more of like a slow pace, but more of a connection to like my everyday life, rather than just talking about the points and just like impact and arguments and stuff like that.
Right. How do you decide which one to use in a given situation?
Well, online they post judging philosophies, and also you know certain judges and you know what they want to hear, and you can ask them before the debate round what are your preferences or like paradigms in which you evaluate debate, and they will tell you like, I really don't, you know, like the critical aspect of debate, I'm more of a policymaker. Then you will know, don't critique, you know, U.S. action.
And that pushes for you to be more of a well-advanced debater, because then you have to have different types of cases to go with the judging preferences.
So do you have a type of debate style that you prefer, Gigi?
I'm more of the policy debater. I like to read fast, but then I also slow it down where I want the judge to understand where exactly I'm coming from. And any case that I run, I believe in. I don't run any cases that I just want to win with. And so that's where I see debate as more of a just the debate. I take it beyond the debate round. An example of that is where I spoke at the UFT against military recruiters. And it was almost like, yeah, we debate all these different types of things and atrocities that are going on in the world, but we should take it further than just the debate round.
Right. So, I mean, I've heard many times that debate is like a sport for the more intellectually inclined. And part of the training is that debaters should be able to take any side of an argument and go and try to win with it, not necessarily only what you believe. So it sounds like it's not that for you.
Definitely not. I on both sides of the argument, you know, there's pros and cons, but it's like, I don't know, it's morally correct to help out Africa and AIDS in Africa. But then if you're harming the Africans even more by hurting, trying to help them, it's like, you know, it's a debate. So that's where the debate comes in.
You don't want to be responsible for taking that position that you think is going to hurt people. So Will Baker, for you as a debate team leader, as faculty here, is this a problem? Do you try to convince your debaters that this is not just about debating what's right, but debating to learn how to debate?
Well, they have to develop their own understanding of that. Even if Gigi's not comfortable on a particular side, every single tournament you have to go affirmative and then negative. So she has to be on that side half of the time, and she has to figure out how to convince the judge to vote for her. And both the competitive and the educational drives really support those objectives. Now, she may decide, okay, I'm not going to say helping Africa avoid AIDS is bad. She might say instead that, look, if we do it in a way that exploits Africans, that's bad, because that's a way of discovery. But that's all about the education and the research and the great grounding that they get from debate anyway.
Like some other sports, are there scholarships and recruitments at stake?
I can explain that.
Yes, sir.
Well, I've been debating for a long time, and I've received a lot of scholarships and a lot of support from Will Baker and, like, the Impact Coalition. I've went to the University of Texas at Austin for my freshman year for debate camp, and I went to the University of Kansas City, Missouri, my sophomore year for debate camp. And actually, I did really well at the University of Kansas City, Missouri, and they really want me to debate for them in college.
Uh-huh. Where do you want to go?
Like the new school, but they don't really... They're not really a powerhouse debate team.
Yes.
So if the University of Kansas City, Missouri offered me a full scholarship, I'll be there.
Do you want to go into politics?
No. I want to be a fashion journalist.
What? You want to be a what?
Not quite the normal expectation you have there, Brian.
So you're going to have to debate with the reviewers for how they see your designs, right?
He's looking for a career on Project Runway, probably.
And Gigi, you said you want to be a lawyer.
Yeah, but... A further extent to that is I also want to open up nonprofit organizations similar to the Impact Coalition to be a resource to students in high school, middle school, and take it internationally as well, building shelters and schools and hospitals.
Will Baker, did this rapid fire style of debating come about as a result of the creation of the Urban Debate League? I mean, is this a derivative of, you know, of hip hop or anything?
No, this style of debate itself, the notion of the rapid fire policy making, predates the existence of the urban debate movement. It's very common on the national circuit. In New York, Impact has really taken an approach to kind of welcome all kinds of styles, and so we have debaters that do these styles, and debaters that have resisted and done other things. We have some debaters that have been very active in the hip hop movement as well, kind of bringing in music and other features to debate, as well as the personalization examples that you got from Q before.
I heard about that. So people are allowed to do that? The rules allow them to bring in music, for example?
Absolutely. Just this past year on both the high school and the college circuit, we've had not only music, but we've had people juggling, dancing, doing puppetry. The notion of what can be argument and how people can advance argument has changed dramatically. Just as a picture or a piece of art can talk to you, we now understand in debate context that you can make an argument in lots of different ways.
So, Gigi, do you watch the presidential debates?
Honestly, no.
How come?
For personal reasons, I guess I went on the website and just pretty much see what they're standing for, and I make my judgments off of that.
Yeah, you mean you think you're not going to learn that much from the debate?
Pretty much, yeah.
Huh.
They can't debate.
They can't debate.
I disagree with that. I watched the Hillary Clinton-Barack Obama debate in Cleveland, Ohio, and if you sit down and listen to what they're saying, it's just like policy debate, but in the slow, more traditional form. They talk about policies that they're going to implement, and they, like, poke holes in the arguments of their opponent.
And we have to leave it there. Keani Combs, a junior at Washington Irving High School, and Gigi Martino, Guillermina Martino, nicknamed Gigi, a senior at the Secondary School of Law, and Will Baker, the CEO of the Impact Coalition that runs the New York Urban Debate League. Good luck to you, students.
Thank you.
Will, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us, Brian.